Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
What is so dangerous about a character like Ferris Bueller is he gives good kids bad ideas.
Why should he get to skip school when everybody else has to go?
Syphilitic meningitis.
He never gets caught.
I remember when that movie came out and I hated them. That was antithetical to everything I believed in life.
Hey! Kennedy.
Hey, Cameron.
You realize if we played by the rules right now, we'd be in gym?
Skipping school, going to Cubs games.
I'm a Southside kid.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. Getting the hell beat out of me. I mean, are you kidding me?
South Slider.
I love that's where you went with that. I hated that movie.
Hated it. St. Elmo's Fire. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
That's the first time I ever dreamed of, like, the Woody Allen thing where you walk onto screen just so I could choke out that Andrew McCarthy character in that movie. That guy, he wrote his first newspaper story. Do you remember it? His first story in the newspaper, the headline was, "The Meaning of Life."
Let me tell you something, Jules. Writing obituaries is not writing. All my characters die in the end. I'd like to write something about the meaning of life for a change, you know?
And you get your chance, Kevin.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
The meaning of life here is fun, good times, little H-U-M-O-R.
Oh, man.
Molly.
Thank God you got
Molly.
That one in.
Come on, man.
I hope you got the score in of the Bogan game while you were writing it.
What's next? You hated The Breakfast Club?
You're not fooling anybody, Bender. The next screw that falls out is going to be you.
Eat my shorts.
You just bought yourself another Saturday, mister.
Oh, crushed.
I like The Breakfast Club a ton. Right. I like a lot of John Hughes movies. That Ferris Bueller thing, just the time it came out, it drove me nuts.
Bueller.
And I'm telling you that St. Elmo's Fire, there was not a likable character in the movie.
Junior high, I played bongos in this band, and I fell in love with our lead singer. And she's saying, "We've only just begun, as sweet as Karen Carpenter." So one night I got really high on this cheap malt liquor, and I pledged my love to her. And the next day she ran off with a bass player named Ringo. So I turned in my bongos for a battered Underwood typewriter.
Hated it!
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Well done, Ray. What a tribute to our little conversation. In transition yesterday, Dan relating to Ferris Bueller. Help.
Morning, Mully. Happy Friday. Yeah, 80s movies for $500, please. That'd be fun. Let's spend the next hour talking 80s movies.
Do you know what's amazing? What's amazing is that I'm good friends with Dan. Like, he went to my wedding. I went to his wedding. We got along famously when we were covering the Bears. I really genuinely find him hilarious. But the idea that the two of us, our reactions to that movie, is hysterical to me. I don't know why. It just tells you a little something about the way we grew up, I'm guessing. David, you enjoy hearing from players in the offseason, do you? Do you like hearing from some baseball players in the offseason? We heard from two yesterday.
Yeah, we did. We heard from two very pretty popular ones in Chicago, Chris Bryant, Tim Anderson, very different reasons, very different moods, I'd say. Yeah, I like that because it creates some conversation. It gives us a little bit more insight. I had no problem with what either guy said. I think it created a lot of reaction. It's understandable. There's not a ton going on yesterday, so we were able to Chris Bryant is almost too honest for his own good at sometimes, and maybe yesterday was an example because I think people may have read a lot into what he had to say, when in fact I give him a lot of credit for just being honest.
Yeah, I think he's a fascinating character. I think part of the problem maybe that Chris has gone through is this idea that, how do you do the happily ever after, right? I mean, here's a guy that came up. He was the college player of the year. He was the minor league player of the year. He was the rookie of the year. And then he was the MVP winning a World Series. And that kind of run, I don't believe anyone's ever done that. It's just an extraordinary beginning to his career. And now we're in the happily ever after portion. And it hasn't, the first 4 years couldn't have gone any better. And then the last 4 years have been difficult, to say the least. And I think that maybe that kind of dichotomy, if you're allowed to break down a general manager over the beginning, the first few years, and then the next few years, can't you do that with a baseball player? And can't you talk about a guy that had nothing but success facing adversity really for the first time?
Yeah, and he's dealing with it kind of in real time, and he's being asked questions and he's trying to answer them pretty sincerely, and he's coming off a terrible year. That was tough for him to get through. It'd be tough for anybody to get through.
Right.
The circumstances were hard enough, and then he stunk. And I think he's not used to stinking, and he's had a pretty difficult time here, and he's got to hear about being traded and all that. So I get it. And I was surprised to hear from him at all. We don't hear from these guys often until spring training arrives. So he was on what, Redline Radio? Was that? We have that,
Redline,
don't we?
Redline Radio podcast. Yeah, we'll hear from him. Yeah, for sure. Tim Anderson, he spoke on Zoom because Tim is the cover man of, it says here, a cover man of a video game. Not a video game, the video game. He is the cover man for MLB 21, and let me tell you something. We've had various years of that in the house. To be the cover man for that is pretty extraordinary. I mean, it really is the face of baseball type stuff. That is what an honor. First White Sox player ever. He is the cover guy on MLB 21. It says something about his swag, about the way you throw the bat, about the attitude that you bring, but it also says something about your talent, and it says something about expectations for you and expectations for the team.
It says something about baseball, too. Baseball is ready to embrace a guy like this and market a guy like this. Baseball does not market its stars. It receives a lot of criticism for its inability to kind of do that. And here is Tim Anderson, the bat flip mentality is catching on. And so I thought you were going to be most excited about the fact that he's actually texting with Tony La Russa. That's a good sign as well.
That is a good sign. And it's not that I'm not excited about that, but I think that it speaks, it was fascinating to hear. I'm sure you're not paying attention to the English Premier League, but Liverpool won the title last year. Liverpool is falling apart, and they lost yesterday to Burnley, and they interviewed Jurgen Klopp is the manager of the team, and they interviewed him after the game, and he said basically that it's his fault when they lose and it's the players' glory when they win, because players have to be the people that win and the manager has to be the guy that takes the pounding when you lose. And that's just the different roles that you have. He said some other things that were interesting, but he had a halftime meltdown where he chased the other manager and was screaming at him. I mean, he's unraveling as much as his team is, but I thought it was great insight. And I think it's a universal that applies, that when you are successful, you don't go running to Tony La Russa like, oh boy, here you go. You go to the player that that has the big moment. And Tim Anderson had the you know, won a batting title and came back and won a Silver Slugger award. And I think that it's not about his relationship with Tony La Russa. It's more about Tony letting him have his personality and be the guy that he is. And I it might be a challenge for a 76-year-old manager, but somehow I don't think it will be, because, again, Tim Anderson underscored face of baseball as far as this particular video game is concerned, and maybe a lot of people in the game.
Well, after being out 9 years, I think it's fair to say Tony La Russa has to adjust to and adapt to Tim Anderson more than the other way around. Even though he is the manager, even though he comes with Hall of Fame credentials and all of those things that are true, Tim Anderson is the face of the White Sox in many ways. And now, you know, the profile is even bigger, and the personality, you know, is a bigger than life type of thing. So yeah, Tony La Russa's got to do that as well. I thought it was interesting too. You know, the relationship between Rick Renteria and Tim Anderson was one that was maybe more special than we thought. And maybe we always thought it was pretty good, but you know, he talked yesterday about that as well. So it, that's going to be something that was worth watching moving forward.
Yeah. No shadow of a doubt. More coaches scurrying off the bear ship, if I can use the term, although it has a negative connotation. I don't mean that rats are running from the sinking ship.
Oh, that's not negative at all. No, not at all.
I didn't mean to put it in those terms.
Okay.
Maybe scurrying the wrong word, just because of the metaphor. Well, how about more Bears coaches rewarded with upward mobility?
Okay. Huh? Now that's going the other way a little too far.
Yeah, that's not working either.
A lot of changes on the Bears staff.
The culture is shifting, dare we say. Dave Ragone, your guy Rags, he was named the Falcons offensive coordinator, and he celebrated that promotion by bringing running backs coach Charles London with him, but as a quarterback's coach. So that's a different role for Charles London. He goes from being a running backs coach to maybe a position in the quarterbacks coach that gets you closer to kind of getting out of the box that is the running backs coach. Maybe that gets him closer to an OC job and closer than to the possibility of getting his own head coaching job.
One can hope, because what's happened in the NFL this offseason is embarrassing. It's disturbing. It's not a sign of progress. You know, the last 26 head coaching openings, only two have been filled by black head coaches. And Charles London goes to Atlanta, changing positions, changing jobs, if you will, because that is the quicker path. But it's not an easy path, because, well, you see what happens around, you know, the NFL yesterday. The Eagles, you know, the Eagles fill their position with a 39-year-old who has not had any head coaching experience, who kind of rose through the ranks unheralded. Nick Sirianni is their new head coach, and he kind of follows the same sort of a path that Brandon Staley out in with the Chargers. And you're like, who are these guys? Where did they come from? And what happened to this commitment to, you know, finding good qualified black candidates? And there are no answers. You know, it's really baffling to see what's happened. So I think that one of the more underrated good moves, you know, in that regard is Charles London doing what he did, going to the Falcons and you know, kind of changing his career path, perhaps, hopefully.
Sirianni, you really wonder about that hire, because, you know, obviously Frank Reich, the relationship there, he was a well-thought-of head coach. But whenever you see like a young offensive guy hired to a team that has an issue at the quarterback position, it goes through your head, you know, are you hiring a coach for one guy or for 53?
Yeah.
And I think that happened here in town, where you had the same, you know, when they went out and they got Andy Reid's number one guy at the time and Matt Nagy, you had to wonder, was he hired to come in here as a head coach, or was he hired to come in here and fix the quarterback? And I think it's a fair question to ask in Philadelphia. because of Carson Wentz and the step backwards that he took. And I think that it's been a question that we've dealt with in Chicago because Matt Nagy came in, wanted to be his own play caller, and allowed half the team to be under the auspices of another veteran coach for the time that he's been here. And that presumably will change a little bit now that Chuck Pagano is gone and the Bears are in the market for a defensive coordinator. But you got to wonder, is it about one or is it about 53? I think that's going to be an issue whenever you talk about a so-called quarterback guru.
Well, what do you think it is down in Houston? You know, it's about one. It's about one. When the Texans make a hire and they sort of hit the brakes on the process because of what Deshaun Watson has said or at least indicated publicly, and who knows what he has said privately, but that clearly is going to, you know, be a case that fits your example. And that's exactly right. You know, you're seeing all these decisions made. And we talk about the NFL's Final Four this week, and what have we talked about all week? The importance of the quarterback position, how teams have to be fixated on getting that right. That starts with hiring the head coach, I suppose. So these decisions are based on that premise, and it just, you feel bad for the people getting overlooked. You feel bad for the people who you wonder what that says about the rest of is that the right direction? Is that the wrong direction? Every franchise is going to answer that differently. But yeah, the Eagles, that was a shocker. I did not see that one coming. We had not heard his name a lot. So we'll see what he has to say. I cannot wait for his opening press conference to see if it's as good as the one in Detroit yesterday.
Oh my God. How about Dan Campbell, the Lions' new head coach? He got up there and he gave you some sound bites for history. He got up there and he channeled, you know, the old tight end channeled his inner Ditka. Can I say it that way? Or
this place has been kicked, it's been battered, it's been bruised, and I can sit up here and give you coach speak all day long. I can give you, you know, hey, we're going to win this many games. I can't. That none of that matters, and you guys don't want to hear it anyway. You've had enough of that. So excuse my language. All right. Here's what I do know, is that this team is going to take on the identity of this city, all right? And the city's been down, and it found a way to get up, all right? It's found a way to overcome adversity, all right? And so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right, and on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up, and then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right, that's going to be the mentality.
Wow.
I will bite your kneecaps off. That is so awesome. That was, I got to tell you, I get it. I know it's meatball. I know there's a lot of people out there that will roll their eyes or have a laugh. I know it'll be played as a joke, and I know that if they don't toughen up that football team, those words will haunt him. But if you're a fan in Detroit this morning, yeah, you got a guy that wants to bite the kneecaps off a team. Come on.
Come on. And look, Chicago is going to mock a coach or a franchise that brings back a former tight end to talk tough at his opening press conference, that wants a team that reflects the city. That's Ditka-esque. It is. Now, he has to win. He has to, you know, not sound like that on every occasion. But there are probably a lot of people that are Lions fans in Detroit that probably welcomed that kind of tough talk yesterday, as ridiculous and barbaric as maybe it sounded to others.
Take another bite. Okay, any questions? Are you going to run a club, Dub? Will you be doing any disco dancing if you win? A little bit of a different mentality, David. I don't know.
A little bit of different. Yeah, I think so. What is it about the podium with the Lions head coach that turns these guys into punchlines? You know, this wasn't Matt Patricia telling people to sit up straight, but this isn't the first time that we've heard a soundbite from a Lions head coach where we sort of mocked it.
Oh, I don't even know if you can mock that. I think you got to just – I think – there is a certain mentality in the game of football that you have to almost admire that a guy got up there and said that. I mean, I got to tell you, I didn't like it, okay? I loved it. I loved that. I thought that was hysterical in a great way, in a football way. You know, let's go.
Well, I don't need that bit much encouragement to go full football meatball on you.
Yes.
So I think if you're a Lions fan, you absolutely loved what you heard because you're excited about your team and you think that at least they have, you know, an identity, a personality, a mentality. All these things are true now that weren't true before. So, yeah, you embrace your I can't wait for, you know, the kneecappers, the Detroit kneecappers.
All right, we're going to get into all of it. We got the championship games coming up. We're going to talk about it. So much fun going on in the wide world of sports. What a relief to have our sports. It's Mully and Hall. We got the Pick 6 next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. Pick 6 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Would you rather have the leaders of your professional football team talking about culture and collaboration, or this?
When you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right?
Did Dan Campbell's performance in his introductory news conference remind you of a certain former Bears coach? And how will it translate onto the field in the NFC North?
Oh, that's fun. That's fun to think of. I love the idea that you want to be a tough football team. And I love the performance. It amused me. It also kind of drove home a point about football, which is, it was back in the day when Mike Ditka took over that they discovered Steve McMichael in practice. You know, it was like, I think it was like the first training camp. He kept jumping into drills when they wanted someone. And that's the kind of football player that you're looking for in any season of any NFL team. So I kind of like that you're setting the tone in that fashion. I get it. I know that we're going to do transition and Dan Bernstein's going to be offended. I will embrace it. I enjoyed it. I think it translates into toughness. It's not about cheap shots. What the guy is saying is that, you know, you get when you play a game and you play it tough, you get knocked down and we're going to get back up. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. The biting off of the kneecaps is, I get it, it's kind of a violent image. And I don't know how a team's going to knock you down twice if you've torn off their kneecaps. I'm not sure how that would work. If you get to that third time and you're looking for another chunk, well, the kneecaps are laying bloody on the field. It seems like you're going to win. I understood what he meant, and I thought it was an amusing metaphor. And I thought that, again, the people in Detroit have had a hard time with the Lions. It's been a tough team to like. I think you bring in a certain Chris Spielman, and the way that he played, I think that's kind of what Dan Campbell's saying. We want guys like that.
If you ask Chris Spielman for advice, what do you expect, right? You're not going to get a guy who's all finesse. You're going to get a guy who talks like Dan Campbell talked, Minnie Ditka, yesterday. So if he wins, he'll be copied. He'll be praised. He'll be admired. If he loses, he'll be mocked and fired and ridiculed along the way. This is not accidental by the Lions. In some cases, yeah, maybe it's a little unorthodox. But you know what? It's the Lions. They need to be unorthodox. They need to try something different. The other way hasn't worked. It's sort of like that Seinfeld episode, Molly. You remember George? He said, I'm going to decide to do the opposite of every instinct that I have. And maybe that'll work. And for a while it did. So the Lions are being the opposite. Maybe this will work. It'll depend on who he hires for his staff. It'll depend on the players they draft. It'll depend on how they play. But one thing is for sure. They are going to play a brand of football that is, in his mind, a tough-minded, you know, a barbaric brand of football. I didn't hate what he had to say. In fact, part of me, the inner football meatball inside of me, loved it.
Pick six! Wow!
A day after D-line coach Jay Rogers left the Bears for San Diego, a pair of offensive coaches left the team. How will the Bears fare without passing game coordinator Dave Ragone, who left to become the OC in Atlanta, and running backs coach Charles London, who will become the QB coach under Rags? Is there anything to learn from the departures? Are people scurrying off because the ship is sinking?
Well, I can see why you'd look at it that way. And I know, I'm glad you didn't throw in the rats fleeing the ship again, because it does carry a negative connotation. And there has to be maybe some concern here. That's not the way I would necessarily look at it. I think that Charles London, as we talked about, he did well in Chicago. He'll be missed. David Montgomery had a pretty good connection with him, I think, and you saw his growth. So congratulations to Charles London. I don't know if Dave Ragone going to this job with the Falcons is, it feels to me a little bit like he's falling up. He's falling upward. And, you know, you have a guy, he was like the fourth quarterback's coach, wasn't he? He was essentially here because he was Mitch Trubisky's guy. You know what? Mitch Trubisky didn't work out. So did Matt Nagy, are we sure that he wanted Dave Ragone back? Do we know that he deserved to be back? You know, do we know, does Mike Fury, who's coaching that wide receiver core that, you know, who had, they've had a couple guys who have lacked discipline and haven't really developed, is he wanted back? You know, if he goes, is he jumping ship or is he being pushed? So I don't know. Guys like this who leave jobs, you wonder about the motivation. You wonder how much the team would have brought them back. I think Matt Nagy now is focused on the defensive staff. Once he gets to the offensive staff, I don't know if you have a lot of complaints about shaking up a group, because this wasn't a great season again at Hallis Hall. So I don't know that I would look at it as necessarily guys scurrying off a sinking ship.
Yeah, scurrying has a negative connotation. I think they can walk proudly out of the building. I think they're you know, moving into different jobs, and it probably is falling upward. David, I think the only reason this would give me any kind of insight into the Bears or trying to learn something from their departure, why was Dave Ragone retained on Matt Nagy's staff? I think part of it was to have a guy that had worked with Mitch before, to have a little bit of some continuity for the young quarterback when indeed the new head coach came in. So I just wonder what Dave Ragone leaving means about Mitch's future, if there is anything to read there. Now, Mitch has been with Nagy. He's been with this staff. It's not like it's the last guy that ever worked with him walking out the door. But I would imagine it's kind of like losing a friend for a guy like that. Again, it's upward mobility. He's trying to improve his chances of being a head coach in the league, and he's getting an opportunity, so he's leaving. But the only thing that would give me that would make me think a tiny bit is, what does that mean in terms of kind of ensuring Mitch is not around, or not ensuring it, but maybe underscoring what could be one of the facts of the offseason?
This is Jamal Adams with a block and a pick six.
What do you make of Chris Bryant opening up about losing his joy of baseball on Redline Radio? Are you surprised to learn the trade talk got to him sometimes? How about his saying Bryce Harper told him the Cubs were on the top of his list after 2019? What would the Cubs be doing now with a 13-year, $330 million Harper deal on the roster?
Yeah, how fast could you trade him? Would he be of any value with that contract, Albatross? So that is a fun thing to think about. Look, I mean, I don't think anyone is going to tell you that that when you talk about Bryce Harper and whether he was going to, they were never going to give him that money. That's the money, that deal is the one that he got in Philadelphia. I don't think the Cubs are going to pay anything near that, and I think they're probably relieved that they didn't, given the fact that they're kind of clearing out salary cap space all over the place. What does this say as far as what I make of Chris Bryant? I like Chris Bryant. I genuinely wish there was a way for him to continue his career in Chicago. But it does, really, like, it's hard. Times are hard. You know, everyone's going through their own issues, and it's difficult to worry about Chris and what he's gone through and how tough things are. It's just, it's unfortunate that when you make a certain amount of money, you really aren't allowed to complain. It's just that simple. And love of the game and all that stuff, I mean, come on now.
I had no problem with what Chris Bryant said. I think he was honest. I think he's sincere. Maybe comes across as a little naive at times. I get that. But I cannot help but like him. I think he was answering a question as honestly and as sincerely as he could. But I'm a Chris Bryant fan, okay? So I'm more likely to give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to jump all over him for sounding like, you know, a spoiled, pampered millionaire. I don't think that's him. That doesn't mean I'd recommend giving him a $150 million contract or being silly. It means when he talked about baseball, that has stopped being fun. I felt bad for him because that's not him. That's not the guy we saw grow up on the North Side. So I hope he can recapture that joy. I hope he finds that success. As for Bryce Harper, hypothetically still being here, if the Cubs had signed him, my belief now is the same as it was then when they were talking about it or we were discussing it. Nah, they were smart to stay away.
It's a pick six!
What does it say that Tim Anderson is on the cover of the RBI Baseball 21 video game, the first White Sox player so honored? Does it raise expectations for Anderson and the White Sox?
It says Tim Anderson is changing the game as promised. It says the bat flip mentality is catching on, White Sox popularity spreading fast. Okay, so the bullseye on his back is bigger, the weight of expectations are heavier, but he can't handle it. We have seen him want to embrace that. And time and again, this is who Tim Anderson is. I'm not a big RBI 21 baseball guy. I'm not going to lie about that, but I respect what it means to the sport and to the fans of the sport. So Tim Anderson can handle this, and it looks like he actually enjoys the attention.
I think it's great. I think it speaks volumes about what he's done in his career, and I think you're right. I think the swag is popular. I think the White Sox are becoming popular, and I'm all for it. It does raise expectations, but I think Tim can handle the raised expectations. I think he welcomes them. I think he welcomes the attention. I think he does want to change the game and bring some fun back into baseball. You know, maybe if Chris Bryant was teammates with Tim Anderson, he might enjoy the game more. I don't know. I'm not blaming anyone in
particular.
Just saying. He Mully seems says, to be enjoying himself.
Mully calls for Bryant traded to Sox.
I love it. I love Tim Anderson, and I love me some White Sox. Should be a fun year.
That is a pick six.
Are you more interested in seeing how Billy Donovan runs his player rotation with Tomas Satoransky and Chandler Hutchinson returning from COVID-19 protocol to the active roster, or how Patrick Williams plays in a return to his home state of Charlotte tonight? Is the potential Williams-LaMelo Ball rookie matchup one to keep an eye on?
Oh, that's a fun one, right? That's the number three player and the number four player. I hope we see that. I hope we see Patrick Williams get a chance to defend LaMelo a little bit. LaMelo's having a pretty good year. He's doing okay for himself, and he was the third pick, and Patrick Williams probably a surprise with the Bulls at the fourth pick, but has played great. I think it's fairly simple, the rotation. I think that Satoransky's going to come in, and Ryan Arcidiacono is probably going to take a seat on the bench. I don't think personally that Chandler Hutchinson is going to play a ton. I think that he's going to have to work his way back into the rotation. I think they'll be careful with him as they move him back in, and I think that the rotation, you can't play everyone, and we know that, but I think that Satoransky probably gets it probably moves into the rotation ahead of Arcidiacono, and I also think that that it's a big night for Patrick Williams going back to your home state. Is your first game NBA game in your home state. He'll have friends there, even if you don't have people there, you got people calling you and you got everybody watching, and you know that, and your phone's blowing up. So I think it's big time for him. I love his game. I don't think there's anything to worry about him trying to do things that he shouldn't try. I believe Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be out of this game, so I'm going to be curious to see how they move. Do they try more Markkanen at five? I'm just curious to see how they'll handle that. But I love the idea of Williams LaMelo.
I'm not as excited about Satoransky's return as you are, to be honest. I think maybe he could help limit turnovers, maybe not. I haven't been waiting sort of with bated breath here. I think Arch has been playing okay, so if he gets his minutes curbed, I don't know if that's smart or not yet. To be continued. I am more curious about Hutchinson's because his conditioning, COVID set him back physically more than it did Sato, so I wonder how he's going to look. I think they should be wise and cautious with him. But, yeah, Patrick Williams tonight is about him. LaMelo Ball is tearing it up, so this is going to be a fun matchup. But Patrick Williams, imagine being 19 years old, going back to where you grew up, miles away from your home, and you're an NBA player. And what a thrill it must be, because he has looked like a pro, and he's a guy the Bulls need to come back. So I hope that he's healthy. I hope that he's on the floor a lot, and I hope the Bulls make it interesting, because they're going to be without Wendell Carter Jr., but I still think this is a team that they win three in a row tonight. First time in 2 years they've been able to do that, so let's hope that it's fun to watch.
Can you believe this? Pick six!
If you could only watch one of the Sunday championship games, which one would it be and why? What Super Bowl matchup are you picking, and which would you most like to see?
Sounds like I'm being punished. You can only watch one game because you were 5 minutes late for your curfew. If I do that, if I had to pick one game, there's no way. There's no way, Mully, I'm missing Rodgers versus Brady, Packers versus Bucks. This is historic. It'll be dramatic. Can you make a list of top five NFL quarterbacks ever without having both of these guys on it? I dare you to do that, because I don't think that you can. So it's going to be Packers. It's going to be Packers and Chiefs. And it's going to set up two long weeks in Chicago where we count down to a Super Bowl featuring two quarterbacks who Bears fans would rather not mention.
Yeah, I think that if I had to pick between the two games, and I'll be watching both of them, don't get me wrong, but if I had to pick, I would definitely take the NFC Championship. There's just something about the idea of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers squaring off in Green Bay, and just the world of possibility connected with that. I'm really pumped up for both games. I want to see something happen with the Bills Mafia. I think you're right. I think that everybody's picking the same Super Bowl. Last time I checked, Bet Rivers, which was this morning, I believe it's still three in the hook and 3 points between the two games. I guess we go with the home teams here, and I guess that's the pick. But wouldn't it be something if the Bills got there, if it was the two smallest markets in the NFL and it was the Packers against the Bills? I think that would be a ton of fun. Hell, I'd love to see Tampa upset. I'm with George McCaskey. Let's call for the upset. But I think that the Super Bowl I'm going to see is going to be Packers-Chiefs, and I think the one that I'd want to see would be anybody but the Packers or Chiefs.
It was the same thing as the Saints last week, having beaten us twice pretty badly once, and we won that ball game. You can't fall into that trap of what happened last time. They're a much, much better football team. We're a much better football team. They're different right now. So you better take care of today's work. Each and every day today.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. That's the woulda, coulda, shoulda himself, Bruce Arians. Oh, yeah. You want to talk horse racing terms? That's a guy you could have brought to post, but no. He went to Arizona, now he's down in Tampa, and now he's bringing Tom Brady and company into Lambeau Field for a pretty significant NFC championship on Sunday, David.
I ask this with all sincerity, and it may be a ridiculous question, but I'll ask it anyway, because you have mentioned this a couple times this week, and I think it is the context with which we look at Bruce Arians. When the Bears made the decision, when George McCaskey essentially picked Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians, was that as big or a bigger mistake as when Ryan Pace drafted Mitch Trubisky number two overall?
Oh, wow. I think it's unfair to say it was George. I mean, I'll go back to the idea that George has tried to hire people and let them do their job. So I get it. He had to he oversaw it. He and Ted had to give the thumbs up to the idea of taking Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians. I will say this. I mean, I think hiring Trestman set the organization back, because, do you hire Fox if you hadn't hired Trestman? And then after going through Trestman and Fox, that's how you get to Nagy. It's a weird.
Well, that's what I mean.
Like following elections. You know, you people overreact. Well, we need this. Oh, we'll go get this. That's what teams do. I know that's what you meant. But I think that with a quarterback, when you make that error, and that's an error that's going to set you're not recovering from an error like that. You bring in Mitch instead of Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes has already won a Super Bowl. He's been an MVP. You bring in Mitch instead of an MVP candidate this year down in Houston, right?
Right.
I think it's fair to say that you bungled that one beyond human comprehension. You just didn't set yourself back a couple of years or 5 years. You set the organization back 10 years. Because it's not just what you have, but it's what you lost. You lost a decade of competitive advantage at that position. There's around it. That's a bigger blow because of the importance of the position. And frankly, you could find a coach for Patrick Mahomes.
I wouldn't disagree with that, put it. But I will say this. If you were a football graduate student studying Bears decisions of the last decade or so, and you wanted to write a thesis on how you could have avoided that blunder had you not made one in when you picked Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians, because had you picked Bruce Arians, maybe you don't have that situation that created the need for a quarterback in that draft. Maybe you're not drafting that high. Maybe you don't have to, you're not set back the degree to which hiring Trestman sets you back. So I don't think you can ever explain away the bad decision that, drafting Mitch and moving up to do so represented for Ryan Pace and his career and what that meant for the Bears' future. Yeah, that was a colossal blunder, a historically bad decision. I guess the only reason I introduced the whole idea was that when we see Arians, when we have this sort of sense of what might have been, well, what might have been was that you could have avoided a lot of mistakes that came after you made the mistake of not hiring that guy when he was in your building.
It's a legitimate point, David. I mean, I'm not going to argue. You know how I feel about it. Phil Emery was a guy that had kind of, and I'm not taking a shot at him. I'm just saying Phil was a guy that had kind of gone down every dark avenue, had been in every back alley, had worked in all sorts of weird ways and strange places to try to procure players. And right. When he interviewed Mark Trestman, he recognized some of Trestman's story in himself. And listen, Trestman, by all accounts, you know, we've heard Dave tell us what a great interview the guy was. You know, Trestman shows up and he's got the parade planned. He's got everything laid out as to how they're going to win. And I think you can be fooled sometimes by the organizational skills, by the way a guy kind of connects to you. Unfortunately, you had Bruce Arians there, who was the reigning coach of the year. He had stepped in when Chuck Pagano had to take the leave due to cancer, and he had been masterful in the way that he had already done it in the NFL, and he was a veteran guy, and this was your chance to again, take the gimme. The obvious.
Yep.
You have to talk yourself out of the better decision, right? And that's what's wrong with that. That's why the whole thing kind of ended up being as farcical. And the way that ended up with all that it wasn't football. It turned into, you know, you had players kind of manipulating the guy because he was open to it, so I'm going to go open a restaurant. Everything about it rang hollow, and it was unprofessional. It was awful.
So rather than look back, like, because we don't want to live in the past like a coward or a loser, to quote
Ditka.
But when you look at the coaches in this Final Four, and we'll get back to this after we talk to Bigsy too, Molly, I think, because it's an interesting question. Think about this. Is Bruce Arians with the Bucks, who has done the best job, who had the biggest challenge this season of the coaches that are remaining? Bruce Arians inheriting, Tom Brady, lucky him. But that was a challenge because you had to acquiesce. You had to find the right balance. You had to, that was difficult as we saw that unfold. Was it Bruce Arians? Was it Matt LaFleur with Aaron Rodgers? And after drafting a quarterback in the first round and that dynamic, was it, Sean McDermott, a guy who, is probably the lesser known of all the four coaches, but look where they are now and look how quickly they got there with Josh Allen? Or, Andy Reid, we shouldn't assume how easy it was to bring a team back to this point because of all the complacency, because of all the distractions that Super Bowl champions encounter. So which of the four coaches had the greatest challenge and has done the best job to get to the point where they are?
Well, I think that's a fairly easy answer. And we'll get to it, but we'll get to Big Z next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.